it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Where we got a guy that knows a thing or two about winning a lot of big games. That's Daryl Moose Johnston joining us now, again, on the River Islands guest line. Going to be on the call for Fox Sports this Sunday when the Niners take on the New Orleans Saints. And Daryl, let's just jump right into it. When you hear the news, when you saw the news of the turf toe for Brock, and it's looking like he's doubtful to go this week, Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, saying at least 2 weeks, what were your...
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
Browns
why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Immediate thoughts when you heard that?
Yeah, a little bit of disappointment. Always enjoy the opportunity to visit with Brock Purdy. I think it's been a great story. We had years ago had his first start of his NFL career and kind of was able to have a couple of games down the stretch that season. So I just think he's one of the good guys that's in the NFL and always enjoy our opportunity to visit with him. So just from a personal standpoint, that'll be disappointing. But Mac is great too. You know, we got an opportunity to visit with him a couple of times, and I really think that you know they're very similar in their style of play and what they bring to the table to quarterback position. So it shouldn't impact Kyle's offense too much. So I'm actually very excited to see what Kyle does for the adjustments. So he's very creative and one of the better coaches in the NFL from an offensive side of the football. It's going to be fun to watch what he has in store for the Saints defense.
Take us through the locker room. You know, I was a young kid and I hated you guys, the Cowboys. I mean, you in particular, you and Jay Novacek used to break my soul. I grew up right near Candlestick. So that 91 team you guys had, which was documented in the new doc, I don't even know if you ended up watching. I know you were contributing to it. But, you know, the Steve Berline situation where Troy goes down and then Berline goes in and you guys end up sticking with him, the coaching staff and everyone sticks with him. You know, walk me through what the players are going through right now in that locker room. Are they trying to rally around Mac Jones?
Absolutely. Everybody understands that you know, in the game of football, because it's a collision sport, you're going to have the potential to be without some of your key players. And the quarterback position, you know, being the big one that you try to protect and make sure it stays as healthy as possible to keep that consistency. But, you know, everybody has had the opportunity to be around Mac. They've seen him in the huddle. I think that was one of the more important things for us. If you go back and look at our teams through that run, we always had a good number two. You know, we had Rondy Pete, we had Bernie Kosar, we had Wade Wilson. You know, we always had somebody that we believed in. And that's great because it's hard to match Troy Aikman's swagger when he steps into that huddle and the confidence that he has and that he instills in your offense. But the guys that we were able to work with, you know, were pretty darn close. So, you know, that's the biggest thing. The guys know him. The guys trust him. So you've been through a lot already. You've been through an off season, you've been through a training camp, been through a preseason. So they know Mac well. There's going to be a tremendous amount of confidence in that offense when he steps into that huddle that they can execute the game plan that Kyle's going to have.
All right, so this is really tough for a play caller. You've got George Kittle out, Jennings might be out. Brock Purdy looking like he's out. They haven't officially announced it, but Kyle basically said so yesterday. I mean, what's he do in a situation like this? Do they stick to their bread and butter and just feed the beast in CMC, who has his own injury stuff going on right now?
Yeah. I know that's the tough one because right away you go, well, you know, Kyle's just going to dial up one of those 45 plus carries, you know, during the course of the game on Sunday. But you know that how is Christian going to do? How much stress does that put on Christian for the rest of the year? But you know, the Brian Robinson addition you know, it just shows you how valuable that was at that time. I mean, I think it's a great, it's a great pickup. You know, for whatever reason, he fell out of favor, you know, in DC. But what a great job by John Lynch and his group of getting him out there, because I've always liked Brian. And he's going to be a, you know, more physical style of runner as opposed to the dynamic style that Christian has. So, I think you kind of expect to see that. And it was actually funny because, you know, Greg Olson made the comment during the course of the broadcast. It used to be my favorite play. And it was that wide zone run out to the perimeter where the tight end and Kyle Juszczyk would kind of do a double team. And then depending on how the defender played it, you know, one would climb, the other one would stay engaged. And that used to be one of my favorite plays. And it was chunk yards, like every time they ran it. And it was kind of funny that last week you kind of saw San Francisco getting back into some of the things that they did back when they didn't have that quarterback that they completely trusted to be able to take them through the game and do everything, you know, from a passing standpoint. So when they were leaning heavy on the run, there were some really cool run concepts that Kyle would use. And maybe we go back to some of that as we get ready to play the Saints on Sunday.
Talking with Daryl Moose Johnson right here on the Morning Roast, on the call for Fox Sports this Sunday when the Niners head down to New Orleans. And let me just ask point blank, Moose, like, how big is the drop-off from Brock Purdy to Mac Jones?
Well, you just paid him, you know, what, $265 million. So you have a ton of confidence that he's a guy that can continue to lead you back to Super Bowl opportunities. So, you know, Mac comes, you know, as a 15th pick overall in his college draft. You know, sometimes a change of scenery is the most important thing. So to get out of New England, who was going through a really, really tough time at that point, it's tough to take over from the greatest of all time, right? So a lot of pressure there. It's going to be challenging for Mac, you know, to be able to create his own identity and his own style, you know, in New England. I think it was probably beneficial for him, you know, to get down to Jacksonville last year. You know, that's another opportunity, you know, to get around different coaches' styles, to get more information, you know, to see how other people approach, you know, offensive football in the NFL. And now he's with a group that I think he kind of fits well into their skill set that they look for in the quarterback. The one thing about Brock Purdy, and this goes all the way back to the first game that we did with him, in the San Francisco Miami game, you know, he was not afraid to throw into tight windows right out of the gate. I mean, he had a tremendous amount of confidence in what he could do in the passing game. And I think that's one of the things that has allowed him to have the success that he's had. You know, he's fearless when he plays the quarterback position, but it's calculated in a good way. But there was a throw in that game. I remember it was a touchdown pass, and the anticipation and the confidence to fit it into a tight window was really, really impressive for a young guy making his first start in the NFL. So I think that there's some intangibles there with Brock, you know, in his confidence, his faith, you know, the way he leads his life, the way he lives his life, that really transitions onto the field as well. So he's just a unique guy. And those are the people that get those types of quarterback contracts in the NFL. If you look around, you know, those are unique players at that position, whether it's a physical skill set or a mental skill set or a combination of both.
Talking to Daryl Johnston, just a legendary fullback and just a thorn in Niner fan sides for so many years. Great broadcaster. I've really enjoyed you over the years on Fox, because we watch all the NFC games here in this market, and you've just done a great job. And, you know, I'm watching that doc. I go back to the doc. You guys were talking about North Turner, you know, you guys as an offense. And it was incredible, because Niner fans had North Turner for 1 year, and we were like, this dude gets it. Frank Gore's best year. Alex Smith was ascending, and then he left us, went to the Chargers, and wasn't really a head coach. I see Robert Saleh similar for the Niners right now, where he is just a perfect coordinator for these guys. Warner loves him. Bosa loves him. He is just a great, great coordinator. What is it about some of these guys that just click with certain players, certain schemes, certain teams? Because it feels like he was born to be the 49er defensive coordinator.
Yeah, it's the ability of that personnel department and John Lynch to find the player that fits the style from a physical standpoint, from a mentality standpoint, that's going to be perfect, a perfect fit for what Robert Saleh is doing on the defensive side of the ball. And that's, that's when good things happen, is when your coaching staff and your personnel department are in lockstep, and you know they know exactly what, you know, just look at that weak side linebacker position from Aziz Alshaier, you know, to Dre Greenlaw, you know, now, you know, you got D's Winters is in there, and it's just it's that same type of guy. And it's amazing when you just see that connection with the front office and the coaching staff and everything, where they know exactly what you're looking for every position. So, and to have a guy like Fred, you know, who's there, who's going to be able to lead everything, to have somebody as dynamic as Nick on the outside, I mean, and those are huge pluses. But Robert Saul it's a perfect time for him to come back. Right, this is going to be a challenging year. You know, the Niners have the easiest, you know, record to go against in the NFL, but I don't put a lot into that because there's so much change from year to year in the NFL. You know, what looked like it was easy based on 2024 may not be easy in 2025. So we'll just have to wait and see there. But I look at Robert Saleh and kind of see, you know, a Steve Spagnuolo, you know, a guy that went up and became a head coach and didn't have the success that he had as a defensive coordinator, and then became very, very comfortable in that position. You know, being able to work alongside, you know, Andy Reid in Kansas City, and what Steve has done. I mean, in the beginning, when Kansas City got on that roll, it was all the offensive side of the football and the Tyreek Hill days and Patrick Mahomes, and everybody's having fun and they're swinging it all over the field. Well, the last 2-3 seasons, it's that defense. It's Steve Spagnuolo, and he continues to, you know, to get the Super Bowls and to win Super Bowls and you know, have the opportunity. It's just you get into that comfort zone and you're just so good at what you're doing, and you have such a great connection with your personnel department, that makes your defense that much stronger, because everybody knows exactly, you know, what are the things we're looking for at every single position across that 11-man front.
That's a great point, and that might be the recipe for the Niners this season, is leading on that defense more so than the offense, especially early on here with the backup quarterback. And Moose, I want to ask you about one guy who might be and might have been considered the best player in all of football the last few seasons, but since last year, and then obviously just one game this year, just hasn't looked the same. Trent Williams. This is a guy that's getting older. Obviously, if his career ended now and he walked away, he'd be a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the best left tackles of his generation, but struggled last week. Greg Olsen was just calling it out point blank on the broadcast, saying, yeah, he struggled today. And obviously, the quarterback got hurt. You know, a bunch of no names nationally on the offensive line. I know they extended Colt McKivitz, the right tackle. You got Ben Bartsch there. You know, just what have you seen with Trent Williams, and how concerned are you about his potential play going forward, given his age?
Yeah, it's so hard to play at that level throughout your entire career, you know, in the offensive line position, especially the left tackle. You get a guy like, you know, like Trent Williams, and you can just anchor that whole left side for as long as he's with you. I worry about the way that the offseason is set up now in the NFL. And I think one of the big things that I saw coming out of week one is how many shoulder injuries there are. And, you know, football it's kind of like you're getting ready for a championship fight and you're going to spar. You know, you put the headgear on and you go in there and you box and you spar, and that headgear starts to taper down, so you can get used to taking a punch. I don't know if we're building the body to the point where it needs to be in the off season strength and conditioning program. I don't know if we have enough contact during the course of training camp to get the body ready for the collisions that it's going to face over the next 18 weeks, and to go into week one and see these shoulder injuries, because to me that's the one joint that it never gets a lot of respect. You know, if you do something to your knee, oh my goodness, you know, we got a knee. Hey, we got an elbow, but the shoulder, it's like, hey, you're fine. It's just your shoulder. But that is the part of the body. You know, if we're taking the head out of the game, we're adding the shoulder back into the game a lot more frequently. And I just worry about that. So in Trent's situation, you know, it's time on task for years playing at a high level, and you're carrying a ton of small injuries, and they start to add up eventually. And, you know, getting ready for this game, it's kind of funny because it's the same thing is going on, you know, on the New Orleans side. Tali Efifuaga, you know, the right tackle, you know, he's got a knee issue. You know, they've got a couple of guys across their line that are having some issues. You know, I think, you know, Trevor Penning, you know, working with a turf toe that's bothered him all throughout camp. So these little things that add up on a guy who has to not only be able to react to the quickness of the unique defender that they face nowadays, but then also be able to anchor and really kind of set and be able to hold up. You know, they put so much stress on their lower bodies. But, you know, sometimes it's week one, right? And, you know, you come out and you just don't have a good game. You know, every once in a while, you just don't have a good game. I had several in my career where you go into that film room on Monday and you're watching it and you're like, okay, what was wrong with me on game day? And you got to get that sorted out. So hopefully it was something. It was just a bad day at the office for Trent last Sunday, and we'll see the guy that we're used to seeing on the field here this Sunday.
Daryl, from time to time, you know, at the beginning of games that you broadcast, they'll show you and whoever your partner is. I know
Kevin Kugler this week.
Yeah,
that's right.
You had Kugler and Joe Davis at one time. You've had many, many different partners, but your tie always looks perfect. What knot are you doing on that tie? I know this sounds so crazy, but it's perfect and it's robust, and I can never replicate whatever you're doing with
that's
the tie.
That's a double Windsor, right?
Is it?
Yeah, it's a double, not a triple. The length of the tie, sometimes if it's super long, we can get three. But the hard part is now the knot with the collar. And there's been a few times where you get the good knot, but it's short. And you're like, you know what? I like the knot enough where I'm comfortable wearing the shorter tie today. And with the sport coat, hopefully we cover that up. But yeah, it's been fun. It's funny. I remember talking to Dion one time years ago, and he goes, what a transition you have had. He goes, you were a shorts and t-shirt guy when you were playing, and now you're like sport coats and ties and shoes. And so it's been fun. I've got a great guy that I work with here in the Dallas area named Salvador Martinez, and he's got a really cool flair for men's style. He's a huge fan of Boardwalk Empire. So if you're wondering, you know, what the influence is for me, it kind of comes off of a friend that I work with, who's a big fan of the clothing that was worn in Boardwalk Empire.
You played with so many characters, and I keep bringing up the Doc, because for me, I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, right? And so Cowboys, Niners, I mean, that forged my love of football and my hatred of the Cowboys and everything. You had Jimmy, Jerry Jones, Dion at one point after he was with the Niners, Michael Irvin. I mean, Troy's a great orator. Yourself, I bring up Jay Novacek. Alvin Harper was, you know, he would taunt people left and right. And Charles Haley. I mean, I'm sure there are many others. Ken Norton for a time. Who was the biggest character on those teams? Because, I mean, it feels like you guys had 15 of them.
Yeah. Yeah, how do you manage that locker room with those types of personalities? Everybody had a, you know, kind of a different thing. I always say that Michael Irvin was the heart and soul of those championship teams. He was our emotional leader, but he was also our hardest worker in the off season. He was absolutely amazing, and we were just not the same with Michael not in the lineup. And that was finally one of the things that got us to talk to him, you know, when he got in trouble and he got suspended. We were like, Michael, I mean, we are not the same team without you in the huddle. I mean, you're not playing this weekend, not because you're hurt, not because of something that happened playing the game, but because of a poor decision that you made. I mean, you can't do that anymore. I mean, there's too much at stake. We got a small window here. Eric Williams, he was our tough guy. I got yelled at so many times by my running back coach because he would ask me what I was thinking on the last play. And I couldn't tell him because my eyes were watching Eric Williams versus Reggie White or Eric Williams versus whoever he was playing, you know, that weekend. It's just, it was unbelievable. You know, the physical battle that was going on at right tackle. And then I know you guys are familiar with Charles Haley and the challenge that Charles brings into a locker room. We were able to, you know, work with his unique personality and some of the challenges that he was facing early on that he has openly talked about, you know, today. Charles is still to this day a good friend of mine. And, you know, when I was coaching my son's, you know, football team, you know, I would coach during the course of the week, but on the weekend I had to go do the broadcast, so I didn't get to coach on game day. And Charles was one of the guys that I would ask to come by for one of the big games and keep an eye on my coach who was doing the coaching because I didn't trust him.
Oh, my goodness.
And the guys loved him. I mean, they just loved him. And the last game that he helped me, we were a winless team playing an undefeated team, and we had him beat and my assistant coach. I mean, it's just snap the ball, take a knee, and the game's over, and we win. And he snaps. We fumble the quarterback center exchange, and we ended up losing on a last second play. But Charles almost coached him to a winless team over an undefeated team. So that, you know, what people remember Charles Haley by, he was very different here in Dallas, and he's been a glue guy not only for our team. He was the missing piece, and you know, you watch that documentary and you see, you know, Jerry Rice talk about the fact the whole power in the NFC shifted.
Yep.
With that trade, and that was true. That was definitely true. And Charles has been the glue of our teams back in the 90s, but he's been the glue of our teammates since we've retired. And he is always trying to help us out. He just recently got something put together where he sent out a text, and it was a cancer screening for all the guys, and he got it complimentary. Because he goes to the Hall of Fame every year, and he's tired of bumping into somebody and, yeah, I just got diagnosed with stage 2 cancer. And he's tired of it, and he doesn't want it to happen anymore. So that's the type of guy that Charles is. He's a very complicated, unique person.
That was very well said. Moose, we really appreciate your time this morning. Was your assistant coach's name Mario Cristobal, perhaps? Because that's something that he would do as well.
Hey. I'm a big fan, Moose. Always have been. I respected the hell out of you. You carry yourself with great class. And even though you were a Cowboy, you're one of the few that we absolutely respect. And we love watching on the broadcast.
And Chasky even says it. He hates that he loves you and Troy Aikman so much on these broadcasts going forward. And we'll listen to you on Sunday, Moose. All right?
Thank you guys. Thank you guys so much. That means a lot. It really does. I mean, that's my one. The people say, you know, what's the best compliment you can get? And it's to be complimented by, you know, opposing fan bases, especially ones that have a deep history, like Philadelphia with us or San Francisco with us. I loved playing the 49ers, and I loved playing at Candlestick Park.
Yeah, I miss it too.
And we loved having Daryl and Moose Johnson on this morning.
Have a great day.
Yeah, have good luck on this Sunday's call.
Thank you. Guys.
Thank you.
There he goes.
A great man.
Daryl Moose Johnston.
Great job, Sam. Way to get him. I've been watching him for 20 years, and I mean this when I say this. He's a great dude. And everyone thinks they know football. I learn something every time he watches the broadcast. I watch a broadcast with him on it because he's so up to speed and understands. Like, nothing's worse than when you could tell a broadcaster hasn't done all their homework. He always is so thorough and knows your entire roster inside and out, watches the last few games, and gives you nuggy nugs from what he's seen and in real time is adjusting. I'm just a huge Daryl Johnston fan.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.